This is a Pinball News production.
Thanks for coming out. I'm pretty excited to be here and finally debut the project. And maybe some of you have seen it, but we have one of the prototypes out in the exhibit hall. It's in the back right corner of the exhibit hall near the BAA booth. Hope you get a chance to check it out. And my name's Randy Parlo. I'm the creator of the color, what we're calling the Color DMD. But I want to point out another person, Chris Enright. A lot of you guys may know Chris. Chris has been around pinball a long time. He actually runs the OC Pinball League. And he's produced a lot of much-needed parts for pinball, a lot of plastic and machine metal parts. And Chris has been a big supporter of this project from the beginning. He's helped me out a lot along the way. And recently, Chris has come on board to really help me try to accelerate things and move the project forward. So we'll both be walking around the hall later. We have these alien shirts on. I don't know if you can see it. So, you know, if you have any questions after the presentation and it doesn't get addressed here, you know, feel free to come up and say hi in the hall. So this is the agenda I plan to go through. I'm going to change it up a little bit and do the video first. I think it flows better. But basically give you a little bit of the project history, try to educate everyone a little bit on how DMD displays work and what the color DMD does and where it sort of fits in the pinball architecture. And I'll show you some of the evolution of this idea since it started. And then hopefully answer a lot of the questions that have been up on the news group and give you guys an idea of what the future direction is. So what I'm going to show now, it's a video that I created at the beginning of the year when I sort of had a system together that was passable as something that belonged in a pinball machine. And I was trying to figure out, there was still a lot of work left to do, I was trying to figure out what should I do with it. And so I created a website and put this video up and tried to hide it where none of you would find it and just show it to some people in the industry and get some feedback. And I think this helps explain, if you haven't seen the Color DMD yet, this will help explain what I'm trying to do. Okay, so that's the video that leaked out earlier this year, and I think you get the idea. We're basically trying to replace the orange dots on the pinball machine to create a more rich, you know, full color playing experience that really fits within all the bright colors and bright lights that the pinball is. A little bit of background on the project. It started about 2.5 years ago. I was sitting around. I'd been in the hobby for a few years and had spent a lot of time learning how to fix games, and even took a try at doing some game restoration, and was just sort of watching what was going on with some of the other contributors to the hobby, and especially the electronics projects. And I'm an engineer, so that sort of fit within my sweet spot. And I was kind of looking for something small and cool to work on, and somehow I stumbled into this and bit off more than I could chew. But I got into my head that I could do something about the orange display. I wasn't really sure why no one had done anything before, and the more I got into it, the more I started to understand why. But, you know, so the big thing was I just wanted to see what it would look like, you know, on a game. And since nobody was building them, and I wasn't going to build a new game, I thought maybe I can try to reverse engineer something onto an existing game. And so that was sort of the driving force behind the whole thing. And there's a timeline up there. I won't hit everything, but just to give you a feel, so it started in the summer of 2009. It took me about a year and a half to get to something that I could demo. You know, and that's when the video happened, sort of the end of last year, early this year. And at the beginning of the year, I filed a patent on the idea, and I set up the website and started showing people the video. And really what's happened for most of this year is trying to take that idea and evolve it into something that I could share with you guys. And so I'll show you a little bit of the process of what's been going on. Okay, so before I talk about the color DMD, let's just talk about dot matrix displays for a few minutes. So I know you guys have all seen dot matrix displays before. They're low resolution, right? Only 128 columns, and 32 rows. They're high voltage displays. They're made up of little gas plasma tubes, and you put a big voltage across it, it makes the gas glow. Something that you might not realize, which I didn't really know, is that the dots are only on or off. there are no brightness levels. So I know everybody walks around and says, oh, there's four brightness levels. There's not. The display's on or off. And the other thing I didn't realize is that these displays scan in a similar way that TVs do. So basically, you'll shift the information in for a whole row, and then that row will be energized, and then it'll be turned off, and you do the next row. And so the only way you get a sense of brightness, or even that the dots are always on, is just the cycle time of the rows being energized. So if you want to create brightness levels, you basically have to start modulating how long the dots stay on. And there's a couple ways to do that. Stern actually does it during the row time, and Bally Williams tended to do it on a frame basis, which I think is a little bit easier to explain. So I'll focus for the next couple slides on how the WPC system works. So the way video is stored in the game and transmitted through the game, if you can think of the original video frame as having four levels, that can be represented by two bits. And those frames can be decomposed. You can take the original four-level picture and decompose it into two separate binary frames, one representing the first bit and the other representing the second bit. And so that's what we call high page and low page. So if you want a dot to appear bright in the display, and hopefully you can see it up on the screen, say the score is at the highest brightness, the score will show up in both the high page frame and the low page frame. Something that's not quite as bright, like the word England or ball one, only shows up in the high page frame and not in the low page frame. And then if you look at the frame in the lower right corner that goes around the hit display, that's at the lowest brightness, and that'll only show up in the low page. And so this will make sense, I hope, on the next slide. So if you open the back box of a WPC machine, you see this mess of boards and wires. I'm going to try to make it a little bit easier to understand what's going on here and just focus on two portions of this. So in the lower left corner is the processor board, and in the upper right corner is the display board. And so what the processor does is creates the animated frames by combining stored graphics that are on the ROMs and then a bunch of other stuff like added text or special effects. And everything is broken down into this high page and low page format. And then that's transmitted up through the large ribbon cables over to the video RAM. And on the other side of the video RAM, this board is basically responsible for pulling out these two video frames in a certain sequence and transmitting it down the cable to the DMD display. And the way it does it is pulling off the high frame and low frame, it'll show the high frame twice as often as it shows the low page frame. So it basically transmits in triplets, something like high page, low page, high page, low page. And so in effect, what's happening is the high page is being drawn to the screen twice as often as the low page and looks twice as bright. And so this is where we get the four levels from. If a dot is never transmitted, it looks like it's off. And then if it's only on the low page, it's on one third of the time. And then if it's only on the high page, it's two thirds or fully on. So the other thing that we can use this slide for is just to try to understand why doing color is difficult. So you've got this processor over here in these ROMs, which were basically originally designed to store binary frame data. You have enough memory to store binary frames. You have enough processing power to send binary frames. If you want to start transmitting color, you basically triple the amount of storage and processing requirements that you have, because you have to do it for red, you have to do it for green, you have to do it for blue. Then on top of that, once you transmit through the cable, if you can get enough throughput across the cable, once you get to the video RAM, you need three times the video RAM, and also three times the speed of transmitting down this cable. And it wasn't set up this way, nor was the original display device set up to show color. So if you want to add color into the pinball architecture, it's really regenerating an entire board set. It's pretty challenging and pretty expensive investment. And that's part of the reason that I think it hasn't really happened in a big way until maybe soon. Okay, so those are the binary frames that the game's generating. Actually, let me go back to this slide for one more second. So if you want to try to add color in here, one way is to go through and basically build a new game and redo the processor board and the video board. And that wasn't something I was prepared to do. And then you still run into the problem that the processor has to still be servicing everything else that it's supposed to do, the switches, the lamps, And so you need to make sure you don't break anything in the process. So that's a daunting task. The other thing you can do is try to catch the frame data and do something offline, outside of the normal pinball architecture. And there's really two places to try to catch it. One is on the way to the video RAM, and the other is on the way to the video display. And when I started, I reasoned going out to the video display was probably more straightforward and would be an easier replacement for the existing display. So this is where color DMD operates. It's on the signal that's actually transmitting out to the normal DMD. So once we get the video frames, how are we going to enhance them? So I want to clear up some misconceptions that I think have shown up on some of the news groups and the forums. I think some of the original statements were, I know what he's doing. He's taking those four brightness levels and mapping it to four different colors. And it's a Game Boy color. And to be honest, that thought hadn't really crossed my mind. And I think, if you work through it, it would look pretty awful because there's no way to differentiate the content in the frame if you're just going by gray levels. And then also you'd be losing the depth and a lot of what the artist was originally trying to convey. So what the real approach is in color DMD is to keep the artist's original intent and to basically just try to enhance the existing brightness levels by mapping color on top of it. And it may be a little bit hard to see up on the screen, but the basic idea is if we have an alien on the left-hand side and we want to make him look green, if we just plop a big region of color down in front of the alien and then let the light shine through that color, it's going to pick up the green. And similarly, we have a big rectangle of red on the side for the bricks. And there's some really irregular patterns where I wasn't very careful, and it's not really necessary to be careful. Just sort of as long as you can get the color over the areas where you want it to show up. And if you look at each of the regions, whether it's her hair or her dress or the alien or even the wall, you'll see that there's still multiple brightness levels there. Everything's been preserved. So once I figured out what I wanted to do and how to color the data, I had to figure out a way to do it real time. And so I tried to build it as an engine so that it would be reusable and could be applied to a lot of different games. So, I think people said, oh, you have to rewrite all the code for each game. And there's definitely game-specific work, but it's not rewriting the code. It's changing the inputs to the engine. So I won't go into too much detail because there's still a patent pending on this, but at a high level, what's happening is the DMD signal is coming into the engine, and the first thing we have to do is try to identify what frames are being sent by the game. And then there's a frame processor, which right now it's just adding color on top of the existing frames, but it could do more than that. It could actually increase the resolution of the frame. It could replace the data with something else, but for now, all we're doing is just adding color. And then there's a video interface, which is serving a function similar to the video board in the current game, which is to just drive a video signal out to a display in a format that the display can understand and create an image with. So this is the basic idea, and then I had to find a way to implement it. And so the solution I came up with is a combination of software and reconfigurable hardware. And so this is a picture of the very first trial of what I tried to do. I went through a few iterations in my mind of what this would be, and originally I thought, oh, this is easy. I'll just go get an Arduino from SparkFun or something, and they had these cool 8x8 LED matrices, which are the wrong form factor and incredibly expensive. So I went through a few different ideas of how to do this, and what I converged on was finally using an FPGA, which is a field programmable gate array, which is something similar to a processor if you're not familiar with it, except that you can design hardware essentially within the chip. And so you're able to run at speeds much higher than a normal processor, as well as do a lot of things in parallel that a general purpose processor wouldn't be capable of. So this is a picture of the board, and then you can't really see it in the big picture, but the controller board is off to the side here. And what I was able to do was get the DMD signal coming down the ribbon cable to the controller board. And then this board happens to have a VGA connector on it. So I was able to use a VGA cable to come back and send a signal to just a regular LCD that I picked up at Walmart that was sort of the right size. And I could prop it up in front of the speaker panel and try to imagine or pretend that this was a real pinball machine. So when I first started, the engine was really just capable of running through some of the canned animations. But it was pretty cool. I could flip the game and hit a ramp and see the animation play. And you know, for me, it was pretty exciting and big inspiration to keep going forward. And so over the next year and a half, I really tried to improve the engine, add some sophistication, and try to find a way to get the hardware mounted into the game to where it sort of looked like it belonged there. So this is the same monitor. It's basically just ripped out of the case. And you can see the controller board is really just adhesived onto the back of it. And there's another little daughter card here that I needed to get the DMD signal in. And tucked away here, I'll show on another slide, is some of the power supply stuff that the monitor needed to run. But was able to get this whole thing into a game and have it running with scores and looking pretty good. And just running off the two signals, the two cables, rather. There's a DMD cable, and then this is the actual high-voltage DMD power cable from the back box, which was an improvement over the service outlet, because with the service outlet, you would turn the game off and the display stayed on with a frozen frame and didn't look quite right. So, and then taking it a little bit further to try to slim out the profile to where I wasn't going to short anything out on the power driver board, what you're looking at here is that flat panel monitor. It's face down in the speaker panel. And you can see these custom brackets that Chris was kind enough to make for me. They're sort of one-off 3D printed plastic brackets just to hold the display into the speaker panel. There's a bunch of custom hacked together wires and things that I had to do to interface to the board. And then on the right-hand side is the high voltage switching power supply and the inverter for the backlight. And I had to get an education in this area because I didn't know too much about it. But this thing is designed to run off line voltage, and you can still see the plug is there where it would go down and go to the switching transformer and generate 5 volts and 12 volts for the normal display. So I was able to jury-rig something together where I actually have the back box power running into this and was able to switch it down and get what I needed. The other thing I didn't realize is that these compact fluorescents run off inverters, and here's the inverter transformer at the bottom, which are very high voltage. So they normally run at 600 volts, and then, you know, when they're starting up and they're trying to kick the lamp on, it can go up to 1200 volts. So, you know, I was able to do what I wanted and make it look good, but it's a little bit challenging to you know, give this to somebody who's not going to electrocute themselves and, you know, come after me. So it was about this time, though, that I had everything together and I put the video together and was trying to figure out what do I do, because clearly there's a lot of work here, right? There's a lot of challenges that would have to be overcome for this to really go anywhere. And frankly, I wasn't sure I wanted to commit to all that work. So some of the things I had to deal with is that the form factor, there's clearly not easily reproduced. It's a mess of hacked together cables and boards. And that mounting bracket is a one-off. I think it takes like 4 hours or something to print each one. And, you know, to do a molded plastic bracket would be incredibly expensive. So there'd have to be some alternate solution to that. The monitor panel that I had stolen out of the little TV, it's encased in steel, and it's really heavy. And there was a little bit of concern about that panel weighing on the speaker bracket and, you know, breaking off your plastic standoffs in a WPC panel. And then just all this high voltage stuff, which kind of scared the heck out of me. And then the cost of the controller board. So these were the things that I sort of had to work through and see, is there a way that I could come up with solutions that might ultimately be something reasonable? And through the video, I was able to get a lot of feedback, actually much more positive than I expected. And sort of gave me some more inspiration to push forward. And I wasn't sure I'd really get there, but I figured I'd learn a lot in the process, and that alone would be worth it. So over the next 9 months, basically since January up until now, there's been a lot of rework on the system to try to make it something that looks like something that could be produced or manufactured. I created my own small custom circuit board to replace that expensive controller board. I think that board retails for as a starter kit for like $200 or $250. For the panel, I was able to find some lightweight, high-definition displays that work out a lot better. And also what's happened over the past couple of years since I started is that the LED backlights have really kicked in. And most of the new monitors are all going to LED. And the benefit for this application is that I can run everything off 12 volts. So the whole system is just powered off the unregulated 12-volt supply. I'm not using the high-voltage supply for the DMD at all. And then I pulled Chris back in to help me out, and he was able to engineer a nice lightweight custom metal bracket. And then with all this work going on, I'm still trying to make the engine better, still trying to improve the software to make it easier to colorize games, and just an incredible amount of work. But this is the result of all of that. Compared to what you saw in some of the previous slides, it's a pretty clean design. You can see it's a narrow notebook display. There's a sheet metal bracket that runs around it and mounts into the WPC95 speaker panel. You can see the small circuit board. And then, again, there's just these two cables that we need to hook it up, just the standard DMD interface cable, and then a 12-volt power cable that's just coming from the 12-volt supply in the back box. I actually added a second power cable there so that if you're running something like Billung's UFO mod, there's still a way to draw power if I'm stealing it away on the driver board. And then on the bottom, you can see what the display looks like when it's not mounted. So this is a standard notebook display. We're really only just using the center portion of the display. That's what shows through the window on the speaker panel. And so if you get a chance, you know, head over to the exhibition hall and take a look at it. I'm pretty pleased with how it came out. So that's where we're at now. This is pretty new. I got this board back about a month ago, and luckily there were no major issues and was able to get everything working and bring it to the show. I think we have one here if anybody wants to look at it after the presentations. Okay, so the questions I've been trying to dodge and avoid for the last 3 months. So where are we going to go with it? I know there's been questions on the news group about some of the IP issues. And so one of the first people that I spoke to when I put the video together is Rick Bartlett. I sent it to him in January, and we've been really talking ever since. Rick acquired the Williams rights and set up Planetary Pinball in the fall of last year. And he's been helping me out in a lot of ways. He's been talking to Williams and clearing the way for any IP concerns. And he's got a lot of expertise in distribution and how to build pinball products. And so it's really been a good relationship so far, and I hope it continues. Chris, who you could see helped me out on the mounting brackets, has really come on board over the last few months. Is working on with the some of the tools I built, some of the software I built, and helping me with coloring the games, improving the process. And between us, we have a second game in process right now. I don't want to say what it is, but stay tuned. It's nearing completion. And then as far as building these things, I want everybody to recognize that this is still a hobby for both of us. And we're learning a lot as we go through the process. But I recognize that there's a lot of people who are interested in it and may want to actually have one. So what we're going to try to do is do a small run, maybe like 100 units by the end of the year. And as far as pricing, still working through all of that, but at least for now we've set the introductory price on those units to be $399. They're not available for sale yet, but when they are, it'll be through the website, colordmd.com. And we'll probably set up something like a pre-order or you know, get on the mailing list if you're interested, and we'll let you know when we're getting closer. Looking longer term, from a distribution standpoint, Bay Area would come online and help with the U.S. and web sales, and then we'll probably look at another one or two distributors to help out with some of the overseas stuff. So that's most of what I had to present. I'll take some questions if people are interested. But as far as more information, see the demo. It's in the Bay Area booth. The game should be here until Sunday morning, and then we have to break it down for the return trip to Southern California. Please visit the website. There's a link up at the top. You can sign up for the mailing list. When I have anything useful to say, I basically send it to the mailing list and try to put something up on RGP. So, you know, thanks for your interest. Thanks for the feedback. It's been fun so far, and hope it continues. Sure. Martin?
About how long would you say it takes to add color to a game's DMD's animation?
Yeah, so Chris and I had a discussion. It was hard for me to say because I was doing everything in parallel over the last 2 years. But I think Chris is estimating about 100 hours to catch all the frames and color all the frames. That seems reasonable. I think that's probably pretty close. Victor?
You mentioned the second game. Are these going to be reprogrammable for game to game, one machine to another?
Yeah, well, I guess we don't know exactly how it's going to play out, but I don't know if you can see it. There are some ROMs on here that can be reprogrammed, and so the same basic architecture would move from game to game, and I guess we'll have to figure out whether we're going to lock the code or it's going to be reprogrammable, but that's an option.
Have the world's two pinball manufacturers shown any interest in your product?
There's been some discussion. I think there'll probably be some more talk at the show, but we'll see.
Jeff, you mentioned capturing the frames. Are you able to go through the ROMs and find the raw frames for colorizing, or do you need to somehow log frames and have it keep track of frames it doesn't recognize for you to then color later?
You can do both. I mean, a lot of the stuff is done offline, so we'll just catch all the frames that are coming and then use software to try to sort through them and find the interesting ones.
And then you had also mentioned being able to do higher res. I assume you could do like character recognition on scores, and then instead of making it all dots, it would be a nice anti-aliased
model. Right. I mean, obviously, it's a more complicated algorithm that you would need to do that, but you know, with the FPGA being reconfigurable, there's a lot of stuff that we could do and improve things as time goes on.
Are the original ROMs changed or affected now?
No, I don't touch any of the original code that's on the game. I actually don't touch anything in the game except to pull the high voltage power cable off so it doesn't short to anything. But everything's the same.
So I had my heart set on putting one of these in the surface while there, but will that be impossible with the size of the display?
I don't know. We haven't lifted the play field to try to see if it'll fit. I think for certain games, clearly the bracket would have to change. You know, we might need some custom brackets for different games. But there are smaller displays than this, too. This one happened to work out pretty well with the size of the speaker panel.
Would it be possible for you to create a software development kit to allow, you know, the community to work on games that they own and then upload them to your site?
Yeah. I'd like to see that happen in the longer term. I mean, there's still quite a bit of manual labor and, you know, finagling, for lack of a better term, to try to make everything look good. So a lot of what I've been working on now is trying to make the engine easier to use and put more automation into it. And, you know, if we can get it to the point where it's easy enough for other people to use and doesn't require an enormous amount of support, it's something that I'd be interested in doing. In the back.
Are they putting out Let's See or Morbius?
I think it's comparable. A lot of the heat depends on it's mainly from the display, right? The board isn't generating much of anything. So, with the display, by changing the frame rate and by changing how high the backlight is up, you can play with how much power it pulls. I think the way it's set up in the showroom, it's about 7 watts, so it's not an enormous amount of power. The board runs cool.
How long will it last?
I don't know. I'm not a QA guy. I don't really know. Hopefully longer than the gas displays.
I am a QA guy, so I'm obligated to ask. What kind of challenges did you come up with when you were creating your new custom board, and what was the process of developing that board like?
I had to learn everything. This is really the first board I've done. You know, a lot of the stuff that I've done since I've gotten into pinball are things that I learned a long time ago when I was going to school. And then, you know, like most engineers, you move into the field and start working at high levels and writing software and not doing a lot with the basic things that you learn. So for me, the fun part of this is really basically going back in time and and being able to apply all those skills that had laid dormant for a while. So, you know, for the challenges, I think things just take time because I'm learning with each stage. You know, some things work well, some things don't work well. I learned that these little skinny power cables can be really, video cables can be a lot more expensive than anyone would imagine. So, it's been a process, but it's been fun.
Question for you: what size, first off, is the LCD that you're using? And then second off, does it mount in the cabinet in a way where it doesn't like block any of the light coming through the translighter?
Yeah. So for this display, it's the same height as the WPC speaker panel. So it fits really nicely and doesn't interfere with the light box or anything behind the Attack from Mars. I think for some of the WPC games, it's a lower profile speaker panel, so it may stick up a little bit, but I haven't tried it, but I don't think it's really going to interfere with anything. Well, so I'll be on the floor and happy to answer any more questions if you guys have them. And just thanks for your time and generosity. Thank you.